Weather Service. Sunny and very warm today, a high heading for 83. Right now, sunshine with 68 degrees for both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to begin this week of morning shows by celebrating National Assisted Living Week. Yes, there is a National Assisted Living Week, and it's important to set some time aside to talk about what exactly assisted living is. It is something that is probably widely misunderstood. And in fact, it is a choice that probably more people need to be making for their own lives at some point when it becomes the very, very best option. And of course, that is different for every single person and what they are experiencing in their own lives. But we're going to be talking about that today with two women who are on the staff of Library Terrace Assisted Living in Kenosha, Lisa DiBartolo and Nancy Davies. Nancy Davies has been on the morning show a couple of times before. Lisa, I believe this is her first visit to the morning show, and they'll certainly tell us a little bit about Library Terrace Assisted Living, but this conversation is not limited to that at all. This is more than anything a general conversation about what assisted living is, what it is not, what it offers, what it does not offer, and this is an opportunity for people to be thinking about this perhaps at a time when they're not caught in the throes of the decision, because probably far too often people end up having to make a decision about this without having really assembled a whole lot of information or without having gained an understanding of what it's really all about. So this is an important conversation, if I do say so myself. And even if you as a listener are not in this situation squarely, chances are someday you will be, or certainly somebody you love will be facing this kind of decision. And I'm hoping that we will be sharing some information today that will ultimately prove helpful and beneficial. Lisa DiBartolo and Nancy Davies, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you.
Good to have both of you here.
Well, and you just set that up beautifully. You said so many of the points about assisted living that people don't realize that they need it right now, sometimes right now, but when they have that luxury, now is a good time. So I hope people are grabbing some paper and maybe taking some notes.
Right. That would be a good thing. Just real quick, Nancy, remind our listeners of the last time that you were on the morning show. It was a conversation that was concerned with a completely different topic.
It was. It was about the closing of Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, and then also the big Ringling Brothers reunion they had a few months later in Baraboo, Wisconsin, that I was a part of, having also been someone who worked with Ringling Brothers. So I have that circus background in there, and that's actually come to play at Library Terrace. I've given a couple of different talks and presentations about circus life and my time in the circus, and that's been really a lot of fun. So around there, the residents call me Circus Lady.
Ah, very, very good. So, Lisa, do you have anything similarly colorful in your own background?
Oh, no, not at all. Not as colorful as Nancy. She does bring a lot to Library Terrace. It's exciting from being in the circus, and all the residents love it, so they really do like that. But my background was in real estate for 20 years in Kenosha. So a lot of that with condominiums, exactly. Mm. And with that in hand brings me to the point of, as people are aging and aging in place, what is your next step?
Mm.
So, and then it is assisted living.
Wow, very good. So that that does nicely bring us to the topic. And maybe ahead of it, although, as I said, we're not going to be talking primarily, or certainly not exclusively, about Library Terrace specifically, it would be good to us as a sort of a precursor to just get a little information about the place where the two of you work as community outreach coordinators.
Yes. Yes, Library Terrace is just a wonderful, cozy community. It's nestled right in a neighborhood on Kenosha South Side, right by the Southwest Library. Our residents can go outside, take a walk. If those of them are still driving, they keep their cars, so you do retain a lot of independence. But our community, unlike a lot of other ones, we just have that really neighborhood feel. And I think that's what sets us apart from so many other communities.
And that we are privately owned, family owned by two brothers in Madison. Hmm. And really, Library Terrace has only been owned by two people. It was the person who originally built the community, and then when he retired, he sold it to a family from Madison, and now the two brothers, once their parents retired, continue, and it really adds to our family atmosphere. But there's all sorts of places that people can go. Maybe something small and comfy, cozy like us is wonderful for a lot of people, but sometimes people like something a little bit more maybe brand new, maybe something that feels more like almost like a hotel that's beautiful, modern.
Large.
Large. so really there's all sorts and everything in between of what someone may want in assisted living.
Sure. This is probably as good a time as any for us to really probe into a really important definition, which is what is assisted living, and particularly in contrast to an even more familiar term, which is the rest home or a nursing home. So clarify that for our listeners. I mean, what is it that sets assisted living aside from nursing homes and rest homes? What do they perhaps share in common? But maybe more importantly, what are the contrasts or differences?
It's funny. I was just watching a program, an old comedy program, and the grandmother on the show talks about being in the home. And I think that's what, and that term, even though sometimes it's still thought of in terms of retirement homes, things have just changed so dramatically. So when you go to assisted living, you're having your own apartment. you still have your independence in most cases. There are different types of assisted living. For instance, memory care for someone who has an advanced case of dementia, then that's a little bit different, though they're usually still in their own apartment, but they're not going to have the same type of independence. But for the overwhelming majority, you're going to have where you can still go out and do things. As Lisa mentioned, some places, you know, you can have your car and still drive if you're able to do that. But it's help, assisted living is for those who just need more help in doing their daily activities. Maybe they have health issues that require them to now be someplace that has care. Sometimes it's someone who's older and maybe more isolated. They're in their home and maybe they're only seeing their family a couple of times a week and nobody else is coming in and they're just home watching TV. And that sets in a whole host of things that can include depression. It can kind of affect the mind where they start to become more forgetful. There's just no stimulation other than that television set. So that's another reason why someone may want to consider for themselves or for their loved one assisted living.
Right. And you have your own apartment, your own private bathroom.
In most cases.
In most cases, mm-hmm. Correct. And you have, if you want fellowship or you want activities, that's all there for you. So you can go out to that when you want to, or you choose not to, you don't have to. So that is what's nice. You still have a lot of independence.
Right. And when it comes to activities, at least the place where my father-in-law happens to live up in Racine, there are activities that occur right there, and once in a while, activities that occur off-site. And again, it's completely up to each person in terms of how much or how little they access. But the fact that they are not responsible for, in a sense, generating that or seeking it out or figuring it out is that's a big plus.
That is really a big plus. They can pick and choose what they like. And at some communities like ours, we even have happy hour every Friday. So happy hour with alcohol or without. So it still gives you a lot of options.
I was going to say something. I forgot. You got me caught on the alcohol.
Sorry about that.
Always a good thing.
Well, and one really good point that we do that a lot of places kind of overlook is respite care. Now, respite care is part of assisted living. And what it does is we have an apartment that's available. You can rent it short term. And it gives the caregivers or the family a break. So if somebody, a family member, is going to take a two-week vacation or they're just exhausted, maybe doing a lot of cares, a lot of housework, that's an option with a lot of communities.
So you could bring that loved one there and they would be able to stay there for some period of time.
Correct. 28 days is usually what it is, but sometimes we'll do a short-term stay and they can stay two, mm-hmm. 3 months.
So the and usually in assisted living, you in most cases you bring your own furniture, but in a respite room or apartment, you've got furniture that's already there. So really, all you're doing is bringing the loved one there. They're going to, as if they're just a normal resident, they're still going to participate in activities if they wish to. They have their meals, the housekeeping, laundry done, all of that.
It's a good way to mm-hmm. really test it out. So if somebody is apprehensive, oh, I don't think I want to do that, I don't think I'll like it, come and try it out. It really makes it easy.
Interesting. It would be kind of an introduction to somebody of what this might sort of feel like to.
Correct.
Exactly.
We probably, just to return to the whole matter of definition of what assisted living is, it might be helpful, although I think most of us have at least some notion, having had to visit one of time or two, what a nursing home is or a rest home versus assisted living. I mean, when we are talking about that kind of facility, what are the most important distinctions?
Now they've changed the term of nursing home. It's called skilled nursing, which probably better explains what it is. So when someone needs skilled nursing, that is where they need to have nurses on staff who can take care of or maintain medical issues related to the resident. So, for instance, if someone had a permanent feeding tube that constantly needs cleaning and maybe changing out, or a tracheotomy, that's, you know, things like that where a nurse needs to come in and do that, that's what skilled nursing is for. If someone has, maybe they've had a stroke, but it was a very severe stroke and has really limited their mobility and their cognitive and their thinking, and they need that constant attention by a nurse, that would be another example. So there are different types of assisted living that can go up to a certain point before someone might need to go into skilled nursing. So that's usually when you're touring or talking to someone on the phone about their community, those questions, they're going to ask certain questions about the health of the person considering assisted living. And then if that's not the right place for them, then they may direct them to a place like a skilled nursing community.
It sounds like we are talking about an arena in which there are very strict guidelines in terms of what this is and what this is and what we offer versus what we offer. I mean, is that in fact the case?
There is licensing by the state. So all assisted living communities, nursing home communities, memory care communities, they're all going to be under the licensing of the state. But certain things, such as if someone needed what's called a Hoyer or a lift, maybe they can't get up from their bed, but it takes two people. They need help getting on and off the toilet, but perhaps because of their physical condition, they need two people. Some places don't have the training, the staffing, the ability to do more than a one-person assist, so that means they may need what's called that lift or that Hoyer, which is a type of lift. Some communities have it, and some don't have the Hoyer. So those are also things. Still can be an assisted living, but it's going to need to be the right community that can handle that.
Right. Interesting. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today with Nancy Davies and Lisa DiBartolo, who are both community outreach coordinators for Library Terrace Assisted Living in Kenosha. And today is at the outset of National Assisted Living Awareness Week. And so this is a point in the calendar year in which we can have conversations about assisted living, what it is, what it offers, and the things that people should be thinking about in terms of making particular choices. But let's backtrack for a second and talk more about that very fundamental choice of when it is time, perhaps, for somebody to leave their own home or apartment where they have been living and perhaps move on to something else. And one of the things one of you said before we went on the air is that it seems like more people are staying in their own homes longer and longer. And not that that in and of itself is always the wrong choice, or maybe even often the wrong choice, but probably sometimes that maybe is a counterproductive choice that people end up making for a lot of reasons that are perfectly obvious. But take us inside what you think the conversations need to be. What should people be thinking about in terms of is it good for me to remain where I am, or is it time for me to move on to something else, whether it's assisted living or some other option?
Right. That is a good thought, because a lot of times what you're thinking is, well, am I safe, or is my loved one safe? Are they going to be safe alone in their home? Or do you want to be home alone? Are you afraid to be alone at night if you're by yourself? Sometimes it's just needing that little bit of extra care. Maybe you're not taking your medicines correctly, or just need an oversight of a couple reminders here and there.
And a good indicator is if a loved one is starting to have falls, they get up in the middle of the night, they fall. They're in the kitchen and they turn and they fall. Whether they've hurt themselves or not, the falls are an issue. It's a safety issue. And there's something going on where they probably at this point need to consider going somewhere such as assisted living. It's more helpful to them, I think, than going, if family can do it, many times family will have them move in and stay, or they'll stay with them. But it does put a lot of pressure on the family, because oftentimes the family who's doing this are, you know, they're in their 60s or older, sometimes in their 50s. But so they themselves are starting to age, and that can just kind of take a toll on them as well, especially emotionally too. They want the best for their loved one. So falling is a big concern, because, and that's one of the reasons why we hope people don't stay too long, because a fall can put someone in a hospital, then into rehab, or the hospital and worse. So that's a big indicator that someone may want to consider assisted living, and to consider it sooner rather than later. Not saying they have to do anything, but if you have the luxury of time, do the research, call communities, take a tour. It does, all you're using up is your time, and you're gaining knowledge. And then when the time comes, you have a sense of where you want to go, who you want to go back and tour with, ask questions of people.
And what it's all about.
One thing we were talking about before we went on the air is that once upon a time, and I remember these days vividly, the far more common option if someone couldn't maybe safely stay in their own home was a nursing home. I mean, that this thing called assisted living maybe existed, but not to the same extent that it does now. And one has a sense when you talk to certain folks of a certain age that they are still back in that day where, if you don't stay in your own home, you're headed for a nursing home and all that means. And that's probably part of what we should be talking about today, is making sure there is clarity about the array of options that are available. And it doesn't have to be that really sort of frightening prospect of a nursing home.
That is such a good point, because we hear quite often from family members, well, my mom, she doesn't want to be put in a home. They can't even get her to tour. One option is not only to try and explain that, but to get them to come along with you. You can ask the community, could we come and have lunch? Can she meet or he meet some of the residents and ease them into this? There's, again, no obligation. Even when you move into assisted living, I should say I can only speak to myself, and maybe Lisa can clarify for me. But in almost all cases, I'm thinking you're not signing a year-long lease. It's month to month. A community needs 30 days notice. Now, there are some high-end places someone's going to think, well, I knew someone who, you know, in California who paid $600,000 and still had to pay a monthly fee, and they buy into that's something I don't even know anything about. I'm sorry I even brought it up. But normally it's just a month to month. Give us, you know, a community 30 days notice. If someone absolutely hates it, does, I don't want to be here, that's all they need. And then they've tried it, and then they can move on.
So in many cases, yes, this is something that you are not committing yourself to for the rest of your life, not by any means.
Exactly.
Interesting. So when people are considering this, I mean, in terms of if this is something that I probably should do, or this is something I need my father to do or my mother to do or whatever, what are the kinds of things that you think are helpful for them to think about in terms of making a very specific choice about which place is going to be right
for
them?
Such a good question.
That is a great question. A lot of things to think about are, what is it going to offer me? Are they going to have the things that I like there? Do they have books for me to read? Is the library close by?
More, a little bit bigger than that is there a registered nurse on site? Some communities don't have that. They have a nurse that they call. How many caregivers, what is the ratio caregiver to residents? Is it, you know, 1 to 10? Is it 1 to 20? What is the call response time? So usually assisted living, people get a call button, or some places still have the old-fashioned kind of pull cord on the wall. So when a resident calls for a caregiver, are they going to have to wait 15 minutes or 3 minutes? At Library Terrace, I'm glad to say, 3 minutes. Mm. But we're a smaller community. Larger communities, it may be longer than that, just by the sheer size of them and how many caregivers they have on staff. So those are some of the important things to ask. Food is always important. That is one of the big things, I would say, in all assisted living that residents look forward to. So you want to ask about the menus, who is their executive chef, how many meals are included, are there a couple of different choices every meal for entrees and sides, what else? But oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's huge for a lot of people, and I feel like someday when this is something I'm going to have to probably do, that will be exceedingly important to me. I mean, when you think about most of your life, you got to make that choice. And for me, one of the scariest things is to think about a living situation in which someone else is going to tell me what I'm having for supper. And what if it's something I hate? You know, I mean, I that just really sounds like a terrible existence. And I realize that's, you know, in certain circumstances, that's just the way it is. It's like the way hot lunch at elementary school used to be.
But you see how important it is.
Yeah, no, it really is. Absolutely.
And that is an important point. If something is served that someone doesn't like, I know this is a small detail, but usually then the dining has something else available always. So whether it's a grilled cheese sandwich, you know, a ham and cheese sandwich, something, there's always usually something else to choose from. Until the next meal when you go, favorite pot roast.
right, yeah. And you can skip the salmon roll for whatever it is that happens to be the issue. Well, of course, one of the things that we've not yet touched on is the matter of cost and of how one pays for this. And, of course, people need to have access to certain resources in order to be really seriously considering this. In general, and you can also speak to the place where you two happen to work, but generally speaking, how is that matter of the financial commitment handled? And what sort of process are we talking about?
Yeah, you're really starting off with a process of a lot of assisted livings are 1 to 2 years private pay. Ours is 2 years, speaking of Library Terrace. And after the 2 years, if there is availability, there is an option to have family care, which is state insured. But a lot of communities, you may be able to start off with that. So you could go in right from, you know, if you're on Medicaid, which is family care, you may be able to go right into that. But otherwise, you would have possibly funds from selling your home. You may have other assets. So a lot of times you want to do your planning as far as, you know, what is this going to get for me? How long am I going to be able to sustain this?
Mm-hmm. And then there are some communities, there aren't many, not a lot of them, but there are some that are income-based. So depending on, you know, you can't go over a certain income, but you can still, you know, you might qualify for that. So there's a variety of places that people, you know, all options may not be right, but oftentimes there's something that can be right for someone.
And I'm guessing that for many assisted living facilities, it's sort of comparable to a college or university where there's like a financial aid office. Or I mean, I suspect you have staff members where this is what they do, is sorting out people's financial situations and whether or not this is, in a sense, within their means. I mean, that's a big part of this.
Huh? You'd think so, but not really.
Oh, tell me more.
That's a good thought. I mean, we do up front, we do talk to people about, as any community probably does, how much are their finances, where is that coming from, and looking at that and seeing if they have enough for, if it's whatever community that they've chosen. But if they don't, I know that Lisa and I do this. One of the things that we really like to do is we don't just say, okay, well, we're so sorry, you can't come here, bye-bye now. We don't do that. We really like to be a resource for people because this is so overwhelming. And if they can't come to a certain community, then we want to say, well, we recommend, why don't you take a look at here, why don't you look over here at there, and see if that won't work out for you. We have oftentimes made recommendations to other communities that we think would be appropriate for them. So that is the one thing that we can do for
them. And I'm sure you, because you work in this sphere, you really get a sense of the various options that are out there. I mean, even places that where you don't yourselves work, but I mean, it's a, in a sense, a close-knit network.
It is.
It really is. We've visited, well, I know I have, and Nancy has been to almost all of them in Kenosha and even some into Racine, but we have visited all of our, should I say, communities, assisted living communities, memory care.
And we network together, too. We go to events, we talk to each other, and we share information, and then we're able to, and ask questions of each other. That way we can refer to other communities more easily for people.
Very good. So I think we should circle back to the matter of when a conversation about this should occur. And maybe one thing we could think about is, for a moment, is if you need to sit down and have a conversation with a loved one about this sometimes difficult situation or topic, how would you advise people to do that?
Gently.
Gently is good.
And to include, make sure that you are, I know Lisa can share more, but making sure that you're including the loved one so that they get to the point where it's their decision. Mm. You may guide them, but there are a lot of things, a lot of questions you can ask them.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions you can ask them. Make them feel secure. Are you safe at home? So just kind of going through a punch list of questions together can really help. And it can make your loved one think, you know what? I'm not safe here. And yes, this has been happening. So let's go. And if you can get to the point where you can say, let's go take a look. Maybe mom or dad, I'm going to go take a look for you and narrow it down to maybe 3 or 4 communities that you think your loved one would feel comfortable in. And I always say, go with your gut feeling. If you feel this is the one, this fits my mom so great, she would be happy here. Go with your gut feeling, and I'd say most of the time it's right.
Very good.
And one of the questions, or one of the things that people often say is, I'm not ready, I'm not ready. Then a good question to ask is, well, what does ready look like for you? Is it, you know, and then they'll either say, I don't know, or, well, I don't know, 2 years from now. Well, why 2 years? What if you fall before then? I don't want you to be in the hospital. I don't want you to break your hip. And then just gently talk through those kind of things and just find out from what they're thinking of what is ready for them.
That's a really good point. And of course, yeah, ready can be kind of a spongy concept, and we want people to feel ready, but maybe need to be nudged. And I just wanted to add parenthetically, you know, sometimes we talk about nursing homes as though they are always awful and always a place. And I have a sister who is a medical doctor who works in a nursing home, and I often stop myself to think about, you know, actually what an incredibly loving and caring environment that is. And for the people who must be there, it's good that they're there and they're given tremendously good care. But for a whole lot of people where that is not necessary and it is not quite the right fit, people need to be thinking about and understanding what assisted living has to offer. Nancy Davies and Lisa DiBartolo, both community outreach coordinators for Library Terrace Assisted Living in Kenosha. I so appreciate you being here. What is the phone number there if anyone is interested to seek out more information?
It is 262-697-8560.
Very good. Library Terrace Assisted Living. Nancy Davies and Lisa DiBartolo, thank you for all the great information you've shared today in this conversation.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
for part two of today's morning show out of the archives, a conversation with the late Indian chef Ravaghan Iyer. On one previous occasion, I had the pleasure of speaking with Ravaghan Iyer about one of his previous books. He is a master chef and author of several different cookbooks, including 660 Curries. And he has written for such publications as Cooking Light, Eating Well, Weight Watchers magazine. He happens to be an addict. His addiction is potatoes. And that is the subject of his latest book, published by Workman, called Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked, and Fried, Too, a celebration of potatoes in 75 irresistible recipes. Ravaghan Iyer, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Greg. And this is one of those times when I can say I'm proud to be an addict.
Exactly. Before we talk about kind of the genesis of the book specifically, I want you to talk about just how long potatoes have been such a central part of your life and a source of such passion. It sounds like they were served extensively in your home growing up in Mumbai.
Yes, very much so. I would say ever since I was a child, you know, my earliest memories have always been about potatoes. And, you know, also being the youngest child, my mother would always, you know, I would get preferential treatment, and she would always say, what do I want for, you know, a meal, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner? And I would always say potato. And I think after a while, she just stopped asking. It's like, why bother? It's going to be the same answer. So it's something that has always stuck with me over the years. And so I think when the opportunity came to do a book on potatoes, you know, it was a dream come true. So that was, it's a passion that is 55 years old for sure.
Tell our listeners about the meal you enjoyed at a Turkish restaurant, I think maybe with a friend, which was really kind of the direct impetus for this book being written.
Yes, this was actually my friend and my editor, Suzanne Rafer, with Workman Publishing. We had, this is my third book with Suzanne, sixth in totality, but I remember she had taken me to a Turkish restaurant for dinner, and she had ordered potatoes, which came as a side dish, and I said, gee, Suzanne, how about a book on potatoes? And she goes, sold. It was a quick conversation, and and that was it. And then next morning, I got a call from my agent, and then I put together a two-page proposal for the book, and they went back and forth, and I got a contract to do a book on potatoes. But that is, you know, one of the things that to me was so important is the international nature of potatoes. You know, there's a reason why, Greg, this is the fourth largest crop in the world, because it is so versatile, it is so pervasive, and it is extremely accessible even to the common person. It's a cheap vegetable. It's also nutritionally solid. So from a standpoint of being able to, you know, have been embraced by the entire world, I felt I needed to do justice to a vegetable like that.
You give us a historical overview of the potato, and one thing I would love for you to explain to our listeners is, although we can trace the potato way, way back to the Andean culture, you tell us it's really not until the Incas that the potato, in a sense, takes center stage. I think in your words, its full potential is unleashed or something. What did the Incas figure out about the potato?
They figured out how to actually cultivate it in ways that were much more conducive to larger crops and the different varieties that go well. You know, and they were able to, you know, use fairly sophisticated agricultural tools to come up with ways that they could make the potato survive these different shifts of climate, you know, within short time periods. And so I think, to me, they were masters at doing that. And then, of course, you know, from there, it just sort of blossomed into the world. And that's one of the reasons why, to this day in South America, I think they are just there alone, because of the soil conditions, they're able to cultivate over 3,000 varieties of potatoes. And so that, to me, is truly the epicenter of potatoes.
You tell us in the book that there are actually 5,000 or more varieties of potatoes all around the world, and yet we can categorize them fairly simply in two directions, flowery and waxy. And this is something I never knew till I picked up your book, although then I sort of rewound in my mind and realized, oh, yeah, that's right. I think I see exactly what he's talking about there. Explain why it's important to have that distinction in mind when one, for instance, is shopping for potatoes.
Because I think, you know, the starch content of a potato determines what the cooking methods are ideal for those. And so when you think about the floury or the starchy potatoes, and you think about the russets and you think about, you know, the white potatoes that usually fall under that category, high in starch, low in moisture. And I think because of that, those varieties of potatoes lend themselves well for, you know, mashing and for baking and for deep frying because of the low moisture content. But on the other end of the spectrum, when you look at the other variety, the waxy potatoes, or people call them boilers, red potatoes are very common. Fingerlings fall under that category as well. These potatoes have high moisture and low starch, and so because of that, they lend themselves well for boiling. And if you want to pan fry them and you want to keep the shape intact, they're very cohesive because of that. So they, you know, they're beautiful for that. So they're not very good interchangeably. So, you know, you can't, you know, take a red potato, for instance, and fry them. You know, you're not going to get the same results as you would get with a starchy potato. So the type of potato makes a big determination of, you know, what cooking methods you can apply to those.
You also point out that, although often they get included, that in fact we have to be careful to know that a sweet potato is actually no relative to the potato at all. I had not realized that.
Yeah, the potatoes, for instance, they come from the same family as the nightshade variety of plants. You know, tomatoes, eggplant, to name some of, you know, its siblings. But the sweet potato actually come from the morning glory family. And those, you know, unlike regular potato, sweet potato leaves, for instance, are very edible. And they're incredibly sweet. And they're delicious, even if you just stir fry them. If you have, you know, access to sweet potato leaves, they are very, very good in stir fries because of its inherent sweetness. But unlike those, you know, you cannot do the same with the potato greens because, first of all, you know, when the potato are harvested, especially towards the end of summer, early fall, the leaves are always dried, you know, on the ground before you yank them out, unless you're working with new potatoes, which are actually harvested early spring when the leaves are still green. And that's when you yank them out, and then you eat the new potatoes. But that's really the big difference between the two.
Mm. Your book is full of what are called tater tips, all kinds of, you know, sort of bite-sized items of information, including some great advice on how to properly choose a potato and also how to properly store a potato. The one little interesting bit of information was your admonition that we should not store potatoes in the refrigerator. Tell us what happens if you do that.
Yeah, because potatoes, you know, the starch of the potato gets converted to sugars in the refrigerator. So you should never store your potatoes in the refrigerator unless, you know, you want to make, let's say we talked about, you know, making French fries. So if you want to make potatoes that you don't want to deep fry, but you want to bake them in the oven instead, at that time, I would say you're much better off than storing that potato in the refrigerator, because then you're letting your starch convert to sugar. And so when you're baking it, then, you know, it becomes nice and brown and crispy. That's what you're looking for. So that's the only time you would. But otherwise, I would say never store your potatoes in the refrigerator. Cool, dark spot, you know, in your pantry is the perfect spot for that. And then, you know, you replenish your stock often and you have the right potato. But if you're privy to actually, if you're living close to a farm, for instance, and you can get fresh dug potatoes with the mud still around it, store it that way in your pantry. And then that way, you know, as and when it lasts you throughout the winter, and if it's nice and cool. And then you scrub them and you've got, you know, fresh potatoes at your beck and call. So.
Fantastic. We need to mention that there are 75 wonderful recipes in this book, divided into six different chapters, all the way from munchies, tidbits, and finger foods, all the way to dessert. And one doesn't often think of potatoes with dessert. I want to mention also the fact that people might pick up your book in a bookstore, take a look at the lengthy recipes, and jump to the conclusion that these are complicated recipes, difficult to prepare. And it's probably really important for people to understand that these recipes are lengthy because they're detailed, not because they're complicated. And that's a really important difference.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. Yes, as a cooking teacher of 25 years, you know, I mean, I've always said my role as a teacher is to explain, you know, techniques, and, you know, there's a reason why we do certain things. And so when they're reading the steps, for instance, they get the impression that I'm in the kitchen with them as they're cooking. So it tells them what to look for, what the end result should be, what's the aroma, what's the color change. And so the explanations are detailed because it's a teaching tool. But from the standpoint of the recipe itself, all these recipes are extremely simple to execute. Some of them have, you know, many of them, in fact, have 10 ingredients or less. And so so simplicity of executing is very, very high. But the detailness and the length of the recipe comes from the explanations that you mentioned, which I feel is important.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that they are there. Let's take a couple minutes to talk about a couple of the most intriguing recipes. I want to start with one that I cannot wait to prepare myself, because I've really fallen in love with chorizo. And so you have a recipe for chorizo stuffed hash browns. And I think this is a recipe that comes from Mexico.
And, you know, of course, morning favorites, you know, who doesn't love a really good hash brown? And I think, you know, when you think about taking the shredded potatoes, and the way it's stuffed is, you know, you have this layer of shredded potatoes, and then I have the chorizo, which is sort of the sandwich layer, and then on top of it, you know, I put the second layer of potato. And oftentimes, the potatoes themselves, the shreds, I mix it up with a little bit of egg in there, so it binds it together beautifully well. And so you get this, you know, almost like a potato sandwich, for lack of a better description, with the chorizo in between, and pan-fry both sides, and sometimes I'll throw in fresh spinach in there, you know, to give it some color and texture and further nutritional value to that as well. And you've got this breakfast complexity, you know, that's one skillet meal, I think. And that's a beautiful, beautiful dish to consume in the morning.
Very good. Why don't I play fair here and give you a chance to highlight a recipe that you think is especially noteworthy?
You know, I am. When you give me potatoes, that's noteworthy. But when you tell me these are fried, I sort of get weak in the knees. So I love, and it's a favorite of mine. You know, who doesn't love a good tater tot? You know, and so I have homemade tater tots, which are cheesy tater tots with fresh tarragon. And it's truly one of those recipes that I, you know, tested and retested about half a dozen times. Not because the recipe wouldn't work the first time, because I loved it so much the first time that I kept doing it again and again. Mm. And it's...
Well, that's how you achieve perfection. Well, let's remind our listeners of the title of the book: Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked and Fried to a Celebration of Potatoes in 75 Irresistible Recipes, published by Workman. Raghavan Iyer, it's been great to talk with you, and thank you for this wonderful, wonderful book.
Thank you so much, Greg, and it's my pleasure, and I hope you and your listeners have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. The late Ravaghan Iyer. Tomorrow on the morning show, I'll be speaking with local writer Nicholas Ravnikar about an interesting project he is part of, which is to put locally written poetry on Racine city buses. Also the author of a great book called Decluttered. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. And a quick addendum to part one of today's program. Nancy Davies and Lisa DeBartolo, who were here to talk about assisted living, will give you a presentation on that topic at Kenosha Southwest Library this Thursday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The public is warmly invited to attend. Our weather forecast calls for sunshine today and a high of 80 degrees. Clear overnight with a low of 55. We warm up a lot. Tomorrow, 86 for a high. Wednesday and Thursday, the high will be 89 degrees. Temperatures receding back a little bit more reasonable over this coming weekend. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.